thought of giving in. I've been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it takes a swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in. Welcome to the shrimp tank, word to Chris Hanks. I'm going to put it all together, this is big thanks. Doing big things, chasing big dreams. Yeah, it's all real, this life's all that it seems. All the chicks scream, all the dudes yell. This is just what I do and I do it well. With the flow fresher than the new shoe smell. Going through hell, well homie keep going. You know the saying, you gon' reap what you're sowing. So I don't chase girls, I just chase dreams. Play the same game, but we ain't in the same league. Running a campaign, roadie 2016. Like a phone to die, putting me in charge. I'm a general from the front, I'ma lead the charge. Like a federal.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Shrimp Tank at the Boca Raton Studio, where street smarts and book smarts collide. I'm your host, Jason Hill, sitting here with my co-host Kevin Cox and Roland Kidwell. We had a great show last week. We got to interview Ryan Zuckerman and Zuckerman Homes. It's amazing to see a fourth-generation family continue their legacy down here in South Florida. If you missed it, you can catch the iTunes or on BocaRatonShrimpTankPodcast.com. Have you ever wanted to take an MBA course in entrepreneurship? We have a crash course for you here on the Shrimp Tank, where we get to interview some of the brightest and best entrepreneurs in and around Boca Raton. We cover the do's and don'ts of starting, running, and growing a business. Now let's find out if our entrepreneurs will swim or sink in the tank. I'm joined here today with Kevin and Roland and our special guest, Ian Horwitz from Horwitz Legal. Kevin's the assistant director at the FAU Adams Center for Entrepreneurship. And just want to take a quick note and see what's going on at FAU these days. Kevin?
Hey, Jason. We've always got all kinds of stuff going on at the Adams Center for Entrepreneurship and FAU in general in the entrepreneurship space. But from a professor's perspective, sort of a laid-back week. We have final examinations. You might remember those from a time ago. So a lot of stress on the students. They're focused on classes. We do some grading and just take it easy for the most part. A couple things on the horizon, though. Our new venture accelerator, the Tech Runway, that competition's really heating up. We got the finalist presentations. That's going to be next week. They're giving away $105,000 in seed funding. Seven teams getting $15,000 each, right? How nice
is
that?
How do I get involved in that? Tell me a little bit more about how you get involved in getting some seed funding.
Yeah, right? There's so many competitions nowadays for new venture startups. Now, generally, they need to be technology-oriented or have some kind of innovation. And we like to focus on student, faculty, and staff ventures. But competitions like these, specifically the Tech Runway, are open to the community. So we're looking for the best and most investable startups. And the best part is that's an equity-free grant. How nice, right?
Oh, unbelievable. So how do people in FAU take a final exam for entrepreneurship? Explain that a little bit.
Well, you know, classes will vary in terms of exams. I'm not too big on exams myself, but I do have one just to make sure we maintain a certain level of rigor. But a lot of my classes, the students essentially have to start businesses, even if they're micro businesses. I don't care if you're selling cell phone chargers or T-shirts or, you know, anything, really. Just learning, experiential learning, really, is what we call it. Seems to work great, gives the students great experience. And then the part that I love is I don't have to grade them, right? Mm-hmm. I have to do these evaluations and get the complaints. What I like to tell them is the market decides, and it is very decisive, as you know.
Right? A success story. What's going on? Who's gone big as a young student over there?
Oh, we've got a bunch of them. The one that comes to mind was just named for Forbes 30 Under 30. This name is Jan Bednar. He won our business plan competition in 2012. Mm-hmm. Company's name is Shipmunk. Does technologically advanced logistics, distribution, and order fulfillment. Really great company. Really great guy. Was in the inaugural class at our accelerator as well. So
nice. And we're also joined here with the director of FAU, Roland Kidwell. Roland, tell me a little bit about what's happening at FAU these days.
Well, Kevin covered the most of it. It's exam week, and I'm stressing out right now about getting all of my projects graded by Cinco de Mayo party on Saturday, to tell you the truth. And it's summer sets in and then we have a little bit more time to kind of plan and look forward to what we're going to be doing in the fall, our boot camp and some other things we're working on, the Family Business Initiative. And actually, we get to do some research over the summer, too, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking at a couple of projects. One is executive compensation in family firms, and another one involves Latino and non-Latino human resource functions in the family firm. So we're going to work on those projects and see what we can find out. Try to publish some of that research, kind of keep that going as we're trying to do our other activities, the teaching and the outreach.
So who's more stressed out, the students during final week or the professors?
Well, I believe the students are stressed out until they finish the exam, and then the professors are stressed out trying to get the grades in on time. Monday morning, 9 o'clock.
Mm-hmm. So tell me a little bit more of the Family Business Initiative. Some details about that.
Okay. Well, what we're trying to do is connect with family firms, and we tentatively have planned a conference in the fall, and we'll have more information about that as it becomes available. But we're hoping to get together some experts in family business and some actual family business people talking about a variety of issues such as succession planning, estate planning, and things of this nature that family businesses face, as well as just family firm dynamics and trying to deal with people in the family firm who might not be they're family members, but they might not necessarily belong in the business. But you can't fire them from the family. You can only fire them from the firm. And that tends to create a lot of difficult issues. So we're looking at those kinds of things and hoping to provide some expertise to local family businesses as well as to connect family businesses with experts in these various areas.
That sounds pretty awesome. And today we're also joined by Ian Hartz, a successful entrepreneur who recently took the leap from a larger law firm and started his own. Ian, tell us a little bit about yourself and your current business.
Sure, guys. Thanks for having me on, first off. It was always my dream to be on Shark Tank, but you sort of fulfilled it, and now I'm on Shrimp Tank. So it's definitely a dream come true. As you said, I was at a large law firm and, for a long time wanted to start my own firm. So eventually, I took the leap. As you said, leap is the perfect word because it sort of is a leap of faith, and you have to get all of your ducks in a row before making that. But we're basically in the business of wealth preservation, which a lot of people call estate planning, but that's really just one component of wealth preservation, the other two being asset protection and tax planning. So the idea in working with private clients and the businesses that sort of help them accumulate their wealth is to plan for, disposing of their wealth if something were to happen to them, estate planning, but also to preserve it during their life through asset protection and also tax planning to maximize what they keep.
So how do you actually find the right time to make that leap? I find so many young individuals, they have great positions, great benefits, they have a great salary, and you always find it's never the right time. Either kids are in the way, buying a house is in the way. How did you really just nail a time and say, I'm doing it, this is the time to leap and start your own firm?
Yeah, so that's a great question. Obviously, that is such a difficult decision that all entrepreneurs face. And you really have to do some soul searching and figure out what makes you happy and what you're looking for. A lot of people are very comfortable within a big company structure and all of the perks that come with it. I think entrepreneurs tend to be a little more restless and have this desire to sort of build something. So obviously you have to look within yourself. If you're having those thoughts and thinking about it, then you probably have it in you to be an entrepreneur anyway. The objective factors that you would have to look at generally are financial. I mean, you have to be reasonable with yourself and practical and put yourself in a position to succeed and not put yourself in a position to fail by not having adequate finances as either reserves or to know that you're going to be able to access funding to get that initial kickstart that you need to start a business.
So the bottom line is there's never a right time. You just sometimes have to jump ship because you never know when the right amount is in the bank account or when the next success will be from jumping ship. Kevin, you have a good question. I heard you're a Florida Gator. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the background with you and Ian?
Oh, yeah. We happen to be at University of Florida at the same time, which you might refer to as one of the heydays of the University of Florida.
Yep.
We're both up there to enjoy a number of national football championships and national basketball championships.
Absolutely. I think if we do the count, it was four, right? We had back-to-back basketball and two football. We had Tim Tebow winning the Heisman. So we crushed it there, I'd say.
Yeah, yeah. That was a fun time to be at the University of Florida. So I've got a question for you. I imagine that South Florida is great context, probably much better context than Gainesville for wealth preservation, right? You see all the yachts on the water, big houses on the beach. But at the same time, I imagine there's a lot of competition. So what do you do to differentiate your service offerings from competition in this marketplace?
Absolutely. Like you said, South Florida is a booming region with a lot of wealth and a lot of people who are very successful and who have attained that wealth. So like I said, we're a small firm with big dreams. And right now, what we're able to do, what I like to think better than most, is provide really personalized services to entrepreneurs and family businesses and successful individuals, and really cater a specific long-term plan to each client. And I think a big part of wealth preservation is that a lot of attorneys will bring you in, they'll sign you up, you'll sign some documents, they'll put the documents in a file, and you won't hear from them again. And we really focus on a continuous, ongoing approach to wealth preservation. So I think we're able to really tailor our services in the current and then on an ongoing basis to really maximize the results.
Well, all that reminiscing about the University of Florida was just pretty sad. I'm an LSU guy, so we'll go from there. You had pretty good luck back then.
Yeah. But, well, you guys handed it. You beat us a few times from
a little bit.
Yeah, but Death Valley is pretty tough.
It is. Not as tough as the shrimp tank, right?
Right. So,
now we've got the Lane train going. So, yeah, I mean, things are looking up for FAU in the Owls.
Right,
you know, big things in the near future.
This is true. But not my question, but I'll ask another one. How about that? I think, Ian, correct me if I'm wrong, but this isn't really the kind of business, or maybe it is, where you can bootstrap. I'm wondering how much bootstrapping are you able to do to start a business like this, and how much startup capital you have to raise. How did you raise it to get the business going if you didn't bootstrap? Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, look, everyone's situation is different. Like I said before, any entrepreneur has to really look at the whole totality of circumstances in their life. A lot of it has to do with, for me, personal savings that my wife and I had accumulated. This wasn't a sudden decision, and I don't think it should be a sudden decision to go out on your own, to leave a job, to put your family's livelihood on the line. It should be something that's well thought out. So as far as capital is concerned, a lot of it was personal savings, and a lot of it was speaking to existing clients that I had, prospecting new clients so I could hit the ground running right when I started, and being able to secure a very little and light overhead. I think a lot of entrepreneurs probably make the mistake of starting their business day one and immediately hiring employees and taking out expensive office space. And in today's society, with the digital aspect of things, I think more than ever before, can you be very lean in those initial startup periods of your business? So, you know, I relied a lot on what I had on the bank, what I thought would be coming in, kind of like accounts receivable, per se, of future clients in the very near term, and tried to make myself very lean from an overhead perspective.
Were you lean in the sense that you were operating the business out of your home for a while, or did you go into office space? How did that work?
So
did you share office sharing?
Yeah, I do office. I was able to take out office space with someone who's close to me, who's in a similar industry. So I was fortunate in that regard. But yeah, I do so much of my business through a cell phone, through my home office and my computer. And like I said, it's nowadays, a client doesn't know if you're in Barbados on the beach on your cell phone or behind your desk. So much of business can be transacted remotely. So I think that's a huge, huge advantage for any entrepreneur, especially in the service business.
Tell us a little bit about your work-life balance today. You know, since shifting over, you know, is it 15-hour days, 20-hour days? Tell me a little bit about that end.
Yeah, so I think, you know, coming from a big firm, 15-hour days were pretty typical, but it was a much different 15 hours. Obviously, the work comes in the door, and as an attorney at a bigger firm, you're sort of tasked with completing the work and going through it. Now, I work just as hard, just differently. Obviously, there's a lot of prospecting and client meetings and networking and doing things like what we're doing right now. But then the work still needs to get done. You have to be careful not to fee chase. You want to actually provide a good service to your clients because your clients end up being such a great referral source for you. So you have to really balance it at first by getting the business, but then also providing the service, which is, for me, doing the work that needs to be done. So there's been plenty of days around the clock working, but you know, I'm also a believer, and part of the reason I wanted to go out on my own, that you have to have some sort of balance, and you don't want to burn yourself out because that could be destructive for a lot of reasons.
So give us a funny story of your last company. You know, now that you're not there anymore, give us something funny that happened that you could finally spill the beans on.
Something funny, wow. You know, it's just, you hear a lot of funny things get thrown around by the higher-ups and supervisors. I don't know how much funny it is. It's a lot of, you know, you sort of sometimes laughing at the people that lose their minds a little bit or are very stressed out. And I don't know how much of it I could repeat on air, but there was a few seven words that you're not allowed to say according to the FCC thrown around the office.
More disturbing than funny.
Yeah, right, exactly, yeah. Enough to make you go out and, you know, go to the shrimp tank and be out on your own.
So what are your future plans, you know? Maintain a sort of a lifestyle business, just consistent growth over time, or something else on your mind moving forward?
So I think right now we're definitely looking for some consistent growth. As I sort of mentioned before, every new client that I'm fortunate enough to service, I try to do a great job, knowing that usually you'll end up doing more work for that same client. And then if you do a good job for any given client, they'll talk to you to other potential clients. So right now, I just want consistent growth. I definitely, like I said, we're a small firm with big dreams. We would love to expand one day. And that's certainly in the future plans. But right now, we're sort of tasked with building the base of that pyramid and giving ourselves a very consistent and stable platform to ultimately take that leap off of into some future growth.
Ian, thanks for those great answers. We're going to take a short break to hear from our sponsors. And we come back with our guest, Ian Horwitz. We're going to go into a section called Hot or Not and really see certain things in the entrepreneur world, if they're hot or not currently.
The Adams Center for Entrepreneurship provides expert entrepreneurship instruction to students, staff, faculty, and the community. Are you a retired entrepreneur? Have a recent exit? Tired of playing golf at your private country club? Is it time for you to give back to your community and teach and mentor and educate the next group of flourishing entrepreneurs? FAU students? If you think it might be, or if you think you might be a great guest on the Shrimp Tank, contact the Adams Center. Simple as sending an email to adamscenter@fau.edu. We're always looking for new mentors, entrepreneurs in residence, and guests for the show. Reach out and we'll get back to you.
Welcome back to the Shrimp Tank, where we interview some of the best entrepreneurs in and around Boca Raton. I'm your host, Jason Hill, along with my co-host Kevin Cox and Roland Kidwell. You can always catch a replay of the podcast if you miss any of the segments today at the Boca Raton Shrimp Tank Podcast.com, as well as on iTunes. Our next section, we're going to jump in with Ian and see if things are hot or not currently. Ian, when it comes to hiring family members for your business, is that hot or not right now?
I don't know. I think a lot of times for starting entrepreneurs, it could be hot, because it allows you to access cheap labor, labor that you can trust. But it certainly could become not going forward if you're not careful, and it could put you in a situation where you sort of have a conflict of interest. I think at first it could be hot, but I think you got to be careful.
And you're in that business, right? So you've probably seen a lot of not, probably.
Absolutely.
You know, sitting with families and learning about their stories. Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. I mean, so much of wealth preservation and estate planning has to do with business succession planning. And, you know, there's that famous statistic out there that 90% of businesses don't survive to the second generation. I heard you allude to last week on your show, you had a fourth generation business. I mean, that beats the odds by a lot. It's not common. And a lot of that is because it is so difficult to transition families' businesses from one generation to the next. So I've definitely seen a lot of examples where the incumbent generation is sort of weary about succeeding the management and the business to the next generation for a host of reasons, whether they're valid or not. And that definitely causes some internal strife between the family.
And you see, you know, family business, they just can't come together to fill out these documents and to put a plan together?
Yeah, I mean, that's the hardest part. I mean, I end up being sort of like a business broker trying to work out issues. A lot of it is psychological and just, it's very hard. It becomes financial, it becomes emotional. And but look, a lot of times it does work too. So, I mean, there are certain examples and you know, those are the clients that I love working with because they have built a great business and they've brought their younger generation up through the business who now knows how to manage the business. So a lot of it is sort of just hammering out in the legal sense and not worrying about, you know, the other intangible nature of it.
All right. So hot or not, launch party. When you open your new business, thoughts?
I like it. It's hot. I sort of believe in sort of having the soft opening first. Get yourself on the ground, get some of the window dressing done, your website, your logo. I'm sort of going through a lot of that now. I thought maybe I'd have a quicker timeline, but I'm sort of becoming a perfectionist with getting my my house in order per se. So I think you could definitely have a somewhat of a soft opening where you sort of obviously tell your family, closer friends, and then when everything's ready and the window dressing is all done, definitely have that launch party. I think it's a great thing and a great way to reach a large audience.
So should we be expecting invitations to an upcoming launch party?
Absolutely.
Is that what I'm hearing? That's absolutely sort of what it sounds like.
I heard that. Yeah.
Hey man, every shrimp has to invite a shark to their party, right? Stay alive.
How about legal immigration? Hot or not?
Always hot, especially if you're the prospective immigrant trying to come in. I definitely think that legal immigration is you know, something that's a good thing because you're giving somebody an opportunity to avail themselves of the greatness of this country. And at the same time, it's done through a process. It can be tracked. It can be accountable. So I would say hot.
Okay. Tell us about your business and how it relates to immigration.
So we have a lot. We do a lot of international tax. My specialty at Georgetown was actually international tax. And so down here in South Florida, as you're probably aware, there's a large international population. And so there are a lot of international families from South America and Europe and other countries that are investing in the United States or sending their children to American colleges with the hopes that they'll remain here. So a lot of what we do is structuring that from a tax efficient standpoint to make sure that people from abroad are able to transition their wealth over here without Uncle Sam taking a big cut.
Stormy Daniels, her current case, hot or not?
I'm going to say not. I like to, you know, politics for me, I really wish we could stick more to the issues as a country and not sort of get caught up in some of this inflammatory dialogue that happens on both sides, Democrat, Republican. It's sometimes it's funny, but I'm going to say not because there's too many problems that need to be addressed substantively to worry about Donald Trump's fling with an ex-porn star.
That's my entertainment every night, though, on Jimmy Kimmel. So I don't know what else he's going to talk about if we don't have that.
Oh, he'll find something, I'm sure.
So I've got a good one related to an area that I work in and I do research in primarily. Angel investing, right? So I imagine a number of your clients meet that threshold to be an accredited investor, and they could engage in angel investing. I also, obviously, what you do is asset protection and estate planning, and angel investing is more like gambling and a great way to lose a lot of assets or spend an estate. So from your perspective, investing in risky startups as an angel, hot or not?
So when you're the person who's actually the angel, then I think, you know, it's private equity. I think it's hot. But again, like anything, like any investment, you have to do your due diligence, and you could really easily get burned in a situation where, you know, the company you're investing in wasn't forthright with their finances, or you didn't hire a tax attorney or a CPA to really go over the finances of the target that you're thinking about being an angel investor for. So, but I love the idea of private equity as a small business owner. I think it's a great way for capitalism to endure, but like anything else, buyer beware, and you have to really do your due diligence for it to have a positive effect on your potential investment.
Yeah, it's certainly a risky proposition, but on the other end of that, you know, your risk-adjusted rate of return is potentially very high compared to other investment vessels, but your risk is also very high. So, right. You know.
Yeah, unlimited on both ends. So,
I got a good one coming from the East Coast. Moving to Florida for estate planning, hot or not?
Definitely hot. We do a lot of work with New Yorkers, for instance, or states with state taxation who are towards the end of their career arc, maybe in their late 50s, 60s, 70s, who are now moving to a warmer climate generally, but also usually hiring a tax attorney to make sure that they remove themselves from the purview of state taxation from their former state. Definitely hot. Great lifestyle down here, and you can remove yourself from state taxation. So hot.
I got a question for Jason. Surprise question. This studio right now, hot or not?
Very hot. Very
okay,
hot.
Okay, good. I want to make sure it wasn't just me. Just revive me if I pass out. Otherwise, we'll keep going.
Okay, we're going to take a short break here and listen to one of our sponsors. And we come back, we're going to jump in to the plead the fifth section and see if we could force Ian to say plead the fifth when we come right back after the break.
This episode of Shrimp Tank is brought to you in part by 2Degrees, the mobile application that's taking social networking off your device's screen and back into reality. Ever wonder who's connected to your friends, family, and other contacts and where they might be? Find out. Download the 2Degrees application for free from the App Store or Google Play. Meet new people that your contacts already know. Get special deals and notifications about local meetups. 2Degrees works for and supports local businesses too. If you're a local business owner, check the website and find out how to host a meetup and get traffic to your business. Everyone is closer than they realize to the next meaningful connection. Just 2Degrees away. Download the app now and find out. Just search T-W-O Degrees.
Welcome back to the Shrimp Tank, where we interview some of the best entrepreneurs in and around Boca Raton. I'm your host, Jason Hill, along with my co-host, Kevin Cox, and Roland Kidwell. You can always catch a replay of the podcast if you miss any of the segments today at BocaRatonShrimpTankPodcast.com. And don't forget to download our podcast on iTunes in case you miss any of this episode, and check out all the other entrepreneurs on our YouTube channel. For our next segment, we're going to see if we get Ian to plead the fifth on one of these difficult questions coming up. So, Ian, is it ever a good idea to marry an entrepreneur?
I think it could be a great idea. Yeah, why not? You know, you have to definitely be prepared to ride the roller coaster a little bit. But like anything else, if you hold on tight enough, then usually it'll pay off and it'll be a great decision.
Have you ever had any cases within your business where you've seen it been an issue where each entrepreneur is a little too aggressive?
You mean as far as in a marital situation?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, look, I definitely have seen, I've had clients that are engaging in very stressful startup businesses, and I'm sure that a lot of that stress is taken home, and there's definitely some strife. But I'm fortunate enough to where a lot of that hasn't been exposed to me and has been kept behind closed doors.
All right, I've got one. You ever turn away a potentially good client just because they were too annoying or too much of a pain in the neck? And will you tell us about it?
Yeah, I have. Not so much at the start of my career, but now I'm fortunate enough to say that I can be a little bit more discerning. And
how about some details?
Well, I once had I could tell you about a client, an elderly woman who I made a house call to interview her, And I could tell you that throughout the whole meeting, there was a lot of tears shed, and nothing from what I said, just every time she accounted her story or was worried about this or that, I mean, she would cry. I mean, I went through a whole mini Kleenexes that I had in my briefcase with her. And at the end of it, you know, I kind of said to myself, this is probably going to be more trouble than it's worth. And I had a friend who was just coming up in estate planning who was trying to just, you know, get some business, get his feet wet a little bit. So I ended up pitching this client to her, and I, you know, made up some excuse that I just was a little overloaded and couldn't do the work.
Oh, nice. So you helped him literally get his feet wet with tears from his client.
Exactly.
Way to go. Yep. Nice.
Salty tears, yeah.
Okay, Ian, what makes you really uncomfortable?
Not being prepared. So much of my business, whether it's an initial client meeting or follow-up client meetings, doing the work in general, the feeling of being unprepared is just a makes me feel very uncomfortable and paranoid. And I hate trying to wing it when I don't really have that foundation of knowledge that is sort of requisite to be winging it successfully.
How do you get into a situation like that? Is it the client that comes up with something out of left field, or just that you didn't do your homework that day?
Yeah, I mean, look, I like to think that I'm prepared on most things, especially when I have some advance notice. But yeah, a lot of times a client will call me and will bring something to my attention that I didn't realize. It's impossible to be prepared for everything. But I think it's a good lesson to entrepreneurs that sometimes it's okay to say, I don't know. And nowadays we have the resources, especially an attorney, to go and do the research and provide an answer without having to sort of be a BS artist.
I got a good one. Have you ever had a fight with your wife when discussing if you're going to jump to become an entrepreneur and start your own business?
Absolutely. I'm very lucky to have a wife who's very supportive, but she's very much my equal in every way, and is a very successful career individual of her own. And she definitely sees the practical part of everything and provides me the support to take that leap, but definitely illuminated a lot of the risk that maybe I was already aware of, but she definitely did her job in sort of making me make sure that I was ready before I took the move. And we definitely argued a little bit.
All right. What's the biggest secret that most people don't know about the estate planning industry?
I think the biggest secret, like what I've been trying to touch on all day, is that most people think it's just planning for where your assets go when you pass away. And that's sort of just like a hard concept to think about for everybody, naturally. But what I try to emphasize is that the lion's share of estate planning and wealth preservation really is to maximize your assets during your life. And with people living longer and life expectancies really exponentially growing, estate planning has changed from preparing for where your assets go when you die to sort of, you know, giving during your life and maximizing your wealth during your life.
That's a great point. I couldn't agree more. I mean, I don't really care what happens to my assets after I pass away because I'm dead.
Right. Yeah. That's a big challenge to a lot of estate planners sale at times. Not that it's about a sale, but you know, I'm definitely under the belief that most people need this type of planning. And I try to really emphasize that, look, it's not just for when you pass away. It's to try to help preserve your wealth while you're still here.
All right. Somebody's got to give them a hard question. So if plead the fifth. You got any ideas?
Yeah, we're striking out on that. Let me ask you this. Have you ever run into a dysfunctional family member when you're working on a plan for a family business where you really didn't want to protect the wealth of that family because that person would be getting it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I could plead the fifth on that, but I really have been exposed to that. And usually, though, it's been situations where the client was the senior generation. So you could sort of have this candid discussion as attorney-client privilege saying, you know, I don't really feel great about this person. Maybe we should put it into a trust with an independent trustee to sort of give you a little control from the grave, per se, and not let this potential beneficiary cause a a ruckus with your money.
Hmm.
Sorry, guys.
Let's get it.
Yeah.
Well, you already asked the Stormy Daniels one. Yeah. So.
Force you to plead the fifth. Have you ever had two employees hook up in the office at your past company?
Man, the answer to that is yes. Oh, yes.
Oh, we had them.
I'm sorry to say, but I've worked for a few.
What are their names?
I plead the fifth on
that. Yeah. Okay. Well, Ian, those are some great answers. I want to thank you for being a guest here on the Shrimp Tank. Where can people listening to this podcast today get in touch with you if they want to learn more about your company?
Yeah, so you can go to our website, horowitz-legal.com. You'll find our contact information on there, email, phone, and we're right here in Boca Raton. And always down for a free consultation. Talk to anybody about their potential issues, and love to get to know other entrepreneurs and career leaders around the community.
Ian, it's been great having you on the Shrimp Tank. You can join us again next week on Tuesdays at 4 p.m. We're going to have our next guest, Stephen Fleischer from 2 Degrees. You've been listening to the Shrimp Tank, where we turn dreams of entrepreneurs across the state of Florida into reality. I'm Jason Hill with my co-host, Kevin Cox, and Roland Kidwell, saying thanks for joining us at the Shrimp Tank.
I've been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When you take a swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in. I've been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When you take a swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in. Welcome to the Shrimp Tank. We're the Chris Hanks. We want to put it all together. This is big thanks. Doing big things. Chasing big dreams. Yeah, it's all real. This life's all that it seems. All the chicks scream. All the dudes yell. This is just what I do, and I do it well. With the flow fresher than the new shoe smell. Going through hell, but homie, keep going. You know the saying, you gon' reap what you're sowing. So I don't chase girls, I just chase dreams. Play the same game, but we ain't in the same league. Running a campaign, roadie 2016. Like a phone to die, putting me in charge. I'm a general, from the front, I'ma lead the charge. Like a federal, fell on my lap, never. Going hard as ever, the results match the effort. I've been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When you take a swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in. I've been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When you take a swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in.